And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is the award-winning novelist, Alex Miller. Alex is the author of Max, a gripping and deeply moving tribute to a friend and Jewish resistance fighter. Alex is the author of 12 novels. His work is published internationally, and he is twice winner of the Miles Franklin Literary Award, an overall winner of the Commonwealth Writers' Prize, a winner twice in the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards, and in 2012 he received an award for an outstanding contribution to Australia's cultural life. Alex, welcome to Dads on the Air.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
So, Alex, you describe your longtime friend and mentor, Max Blatt, as a German, Polish, Jewish, socialist, intellectual. When you started on your voyage of discovery, what were you looking for?
I was looking to find his childhood and his background. He'd told me as much as he was able to tell me about his adult life. But he hardly ever mentioned his family. He once mentioned the fact that either his father or his grandfather, and I can't remember which it was a brushmaker in Galicia or somewhere like that. Now, I didn't take any notes, and I always just listened to what he said and didn't ask him any questions because I was aware of the fact that he had difficulty talking about his past and was trying to give me his story, but struggled to do it because a lot of it was just very difficult for him to talk about, even though he did want me to know the story. So he kind of bequeathed to me over the years what I thought of as a precious hoard of shards of memory, his memory of his past. And there was a kind of implication that maybe, I mean, he was a great supporter of my ambition to be a novelist, to be a writer. And there was a kind of implication in this that maybe one day I would try and knit these broken pieces together again to find his story and the story of his family. This turned out to be much truer than I thought it was when we found his family in Israel. And his niece reminded me that she and I had met 50 years ago. It was pretty amazing. It was an amazing search, Bill. It lasted for 5 years. I mean, the implication of this book was in me all my writing life, from when my early 20s, when I met him, right through. He was a kind of, he was really my moral guide through in my writing all my life. He's always been there, and whenever I've been writing a book, I've always thought, would Max have admired this? Is it something that he would have been able to admire? That's the question. And I've never met anybody who had his kind of, I don't know, sort of belief in, despite what had happened to him, despite being tortured by the Gestapo, despite being losing his family and everybody, he was, while he was broken, he wasn't bowed. He hadn't given up inside. He was still a man of great depth and belief and hope. And it's a paradox. It's a paradox because he described himself as futile and broken. So, and those things were true. It's complex, as all relationships are. And he somehow survived all this in a very quiet, withdrawn, and thoughtful way that I found immensely attractive.
And I think all those things came out in your book. He died in 1981 at a pretty good age, really, I suppose, of 74. But then you started your research in 2012. I was just wondering what kicked you off to actually get on with this book.
Well, I'm 83, and I thought, I can't possibly have that much longer. And, I mean, I suppose the trigger in some ways was the fact that my wife and I went to Berlin, our daughter, went to 2011 or 12, not sure which, about around then anyway. And we went over the following year, which I think was 2012, for the first time to spend a month or so over there with her. And we continue to do that every year. And I think, I mean, if you've ever been to Berlin, you know that the Holocaust isn't hidden. It's in your face. The Second World War and the Holocaust are absolutely memorialised everywhere, all over the place. You can't avoid it. My wife said to me, for heaven's sake, why don't you write about Max? Why don't you look for his sources? Because she knew how important he was to me. And she'd met him. Yeah, I mean, she saw him as a broken man, damaged, she said. I couldn't believe that. I thought there was something beyond being broken in him. Yeah, it wasn't a sufficient description of the person at all. I didn't want it to dominate my thinking either. I mean, this book is a memorial to him. It's bringing him back. It brought him back. He's now present in history. I put together all his references to him in my reading list there, and in the research I did in the various archives, and brought it all together into contact with his family in Israel. Yeah, I mean, it's been a fantastic journey, and I've always felt I really had to do it, but it's been a struggle to believe I might be able to do it. One thing, I mean, I had to learn German, which is not an easy language, to be able to read the sources. It just seemed a massive ask at the end, towards the end of my life, you know.
And the search started with some mysteries. I mean, you weren't sure at the beginning where he was born, what his real name was, whether he had a family. All these things were revealed in your research, weren't they?
Yes, they were in the end. I mean, one of the things about the great American, mostly, mainly American and European histories of that period, is that end of the people like Max, who resisted the Gestapo. Most of them were killed, of course, and he was on the Gestapo's most wanted list when he finally got away. The stories of those people, the studies of them that have been done, don't tell you anything about their about their childhood. And you and I both know that the sort of childhood we had is critical to the sort of people we became and the kind of things we had to confront in our lives. That if you had a lovely, loving home with a mum and a dad and brothers and sisters, you're probably a person of reasonable happiness and contentment. And if you didn't, if you had a deeply troubled childhood, then you've got things to sort out, and those things probably take you a lifetime.
Yes, you sometimes think people don't have a chance, but he did find himself. And I pick up that you, although you followed the documents, it was really the memories of people that were perhaps more, even more important to you in following this story.
Yes, in the end, yeah. Mm. I mean, I did history at Melbourne University, and one of my teachers there, he always told us, if you're doing something where there are people around whose grandparents or who themselves knew something about it, for God's sake, speak to them, because they are an invaluable source. They've got a testimony, and they'll be happy to give it to you. So I think they call it oral history or something. But and read the books, of course, read the studies, but contact the people. And that's a big deal with all this stuff, with stuff that's the Second World War. We've got third and in some cases fourth generation people who want to know what happened. They want the facts. So that's why this is a non-fiction book, and why there's a list of sources in it and notes and the names of the people who helped me along the way, beginning with the Holocaust Centre here in Melbourne. They're all there. Anyone who wants to can follow my tracks and check for themselves.
Well, some victims of the Nazis died without a trace, and I guess an example of that is Max's wife, Hannah. And the only record there was a photo he kept in his wallet for over 40 years, which is an amazing story on its own. Perhaps the word you use, Zal, Z-A-L, it's a Polish word, would you say that might describe this situation?
Yeah, that was a word that was given to me by a friend who is lived in America, originally Polish, and lives in Melbourne now. It's a difficult word to translate, he said, because it has a kind of resonant and poetic meaning of something like melancholy, and these sorts of things slip through the mind without being defined, don't they?
Mm.
And through the moods of people. And I don't speak Polish, but that was the word. You've obviously read the book.
I have. I cut every page.
No.
So, just speaking of that photograph too, I mean, his second wife, Max's second wife, Ruth, found that photo after he died, and she burnt it, which was the only available record. Have you any idea what her motives were in burning that photo?
Jealousy. She didn't want it in the record.
It's amazing.
He kept it in his wallet all his life. And you don't do that, do you? He didn't know what happened to his family. I found out for him in a way. I mean, what I've done is linked his story to the living. And we now all have a memorial to him, his family, anyone else who knew him was interested. And there are lots and lots of people who are vitally interested in this. But they need the facts. They don't want something made up by a novelist. Not for their purposes. Their purposes are, I want to know what really happened. And that's what we've been in search of, what I've been in search of, and the people who've helped me have been in search of. The photograph, you don't keep the photograph in your wallet for 40 or 50 years without, I mean, not knowing what happened to Hannah. Mm-hmm. She's in a sense, and you put your finger on it, then she's the most poignant absence in the book, to my way of thinking. Someone said to me, what do you think Max would say if he read this book now? I said, I think he would weep, and mm-hmm. I think he would weep for Hannah again, because we never did find her, and we never found her family name, which that would have been an enormous help and would have probably led us to her. But Hannah is a common name, and to keep her photograph all that time is keeping it surely in the hope that maybe she survived as he did, and he doesn't know, and she doesn't know he survived. And this is a story that, you know, it's not unique. From that period, people were smashed and torn apart. And to bring the pieces together again is an ongoing study that will go on for many, many generations. And its repercussions are still moving through life and through the world and through all of us, the repercussions of that period and through the generations of people. She was pregnant when he last saw her. Was the child born? Did it grow up? Did it have children of its own? I mean, these are immense questions, and they're so sad.
And we're speaking today with Alex Miller, who is the author of a new book called Max, a gripping and deeply moving tribute to a friend and Jewish Nazi resistance fighter. Alex, we've come to the stage of the program where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you've picked and perhaps why you picked it?
Yeah, I picked Pink Floyd's Brick in the Wall. It's a song, I think it came out around the year of Max's death, actually. I just checked out the other day when you asked me to think of a song, and I thought of that one. I think it came out in 1981, so it's just a little coincidence that means nothing. But still, I do remember being enormously impressed by that song because it represented almost exactly my attitude as a boy at school and our attitude of our... I mean, I went to a secondary modern school in South London, and this is the secondary school, not the primary school, which I also went to down there. But it was wartime for us, not real wartime. It was wartime between teachers and students. Yeah, and that song just absolutely said it. So I listened to it again the other day, and I was enormously relieved to really find it an inspiring song still. It's just wonderful.
Thank you.
And that was Another Brick in the Wall by Pink Floyd, especially chosen for us today by our guest, Alex Miller. Alex is the author of a new book called Max. So, Alex, in the course of your research, there were some unlikely connections. As an award-winning novelist, can you say that truth is sometimes stranger than fiction?
Well, that's another of those wonderful summations of complex things, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I learned, one of the most beautiful things about writing the book, apart from anything else, as a writer, was that I discovered these brilliant little connections, as you say, that led off. And if I had interfered by inventing something and putting that in there, I would have missed them. The invention would have taken the place of that little connection. And the connections were between people. And I think possibly what you're talking about is when the writer, a Melbourne writer and good friend, Arnold Zabel, said to me, well, if you go to Warsaw, would you put some flowers on the grave of Marek Edelman for me? And I'd never heard of Marek Edelman then. I have now, of course. But I said, yeah, no worries, mate. And I did that. But that led me then to a book by Polish writer Hanna Krall, who I just loved her work. It was fantastic. And I wanted to thank her. I read all the books that were available in English, in English translations. So I wrote to her. I found out an address for her, an email, and I wrote to her, and she wrote back, delighted to have heard from me. She's my age. So I was relieved to find she was still alive. And so that was one connection. But also there were other connections that that were linked, connections with people that were linked to Arnold's request. It seemed like, and I say this in the book, an innocent enough request that had very little to do with what I was up to. I was looking for Max. I wasn't worrying about so much about Marek Edelman and these other people. No, I was entering into an area where connections exist that I was ignorant of at the time. And these began to emerge as I continued with the research, and they gradually opened up a whole new field of understanding of this subject. It's really magical, and that wouldn't have happened if I'd written this book as a fiction.
Do you see perhaps some connections with modern days between, say, those Holocaust survivors and Australian Aborigines in our society?
Definitely, definitely, yeah, no question about it. I mean, one of the most, we had this wonderful time in on the farm in Shadmont Vora in Israel with Max's family, and Liat and Yossi, his niece and nephew, got all their kids to come up from Tel Aviv and from everywhere else, and we all sat around talking and laughing and carrying on for days and eating. And one of the very intriguing moments was when Oded and Kiran, Liat's son and daughter, said to me, you know, we are a damaged people. And we didn't really unpack exactly what they meant by that. But the thing that occurred to me was that, and they are, what are they, about third generation people, yeah. And they had the same sense of belonging as Aborigines do. If you're walking down the street, if we have Aboriginal friends from Queensland who come down and see us and stay with us, and if you're walking down the street in Melbourne with an Aboriginal person, and another Aboriginal person comes along, well, they'll say to each other, "G'day, brother," or "G'day, sister," or whatever, and they acknowledge, even though they may be in competition in privately or whatever, or not know each other from Adam, there's this linking thing that gives them, that they are members of this same group, and it gives them a strength. And this is the Holocaust, in a sense, for the second and third generation people, gives them also a common sense, a common bond that's a strength. It sounds like a paradox, and I suppose it is. But it forms a strong bond that nothing can really break or touch. And there's a sacredness about that. I mean, that bond doesn't belong to me. I'm not Jewish and I'm not Aborigine. But they have that bond. Maybe there are people in the world I might feel like that with. I don't know. I've never met them or understood a cause. But they've both been deprived of their culture. The Jewish Eastern European culture was destroyed by the Nazis. There are little pockets of it that are being resurrected and rebuilt, but nothing compared to what it was.
You mentioned those strong family bonds now. Do you think Max ever came to understand the positive influence he'd had on others? I mean, yourself included?
Well, I think we loved each other. There's no question about that. He was so important to me as a, well, we talk about mentor these days is the term we use. I wouldn't have used it then, but it's sort of established its meaning, I think. And, he was a moral leader. Whether he was aware of that, I wonder if we are. Are we aware of the sort of influence we have? We're more aware of the influence others have on us, aren't we? To be honest with you, you know, probably the two most important moments in my life were one where my wife said, I want to have a baby, not long after we met. It never occurred to me before that someone might want to have my baby. And that was the beginning of our family life, which has been the mainstay of my life. And when Max gave me that book and believed in me, those two moments, without them, I wouldn't be the person I am. And I'm aware of their influence on me, but I wonder if they're quite as much aware of my influence on them. It's hard to know, isn't it?
Yes. Well, really taken a long time to get Max's story out there, but thank goodness it is there, and I think it's always going to remain current, the effect on the Jewish people, but on the whole world. I mean, you have a photo of Max's family there, and it's very sobering when you think that only two of them survived, and they're all these young, beautiful young children, and they're all killed by the Nazis.
It's a tough photo, that, isn't it?
It's a very tough photo. But it's a very valuable photo, and it's a wonderful, the whole book is a wonderful tribute. The book is full of so much. You can get so much out of it. You can learn what these qualities are, what Max's values were, which I think we can a lot of us can aspire to, and it's a wonderful read from a wonderful novelist. But look, we've run out of time, unfortunately. Just like to thank, give a special thank you to our guest, Alex Miller. Alex, thank you very much for being a guest on Dads on the Air.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure, Bill. Lovely talking to you.
Thank you. And look, don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email. We'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.